You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Everybody old enough to remember 1967 is feeling a complicated mix of emotions, watching Michiganders take to the streets. But what's different this time? And why is it so many white people have felt moved to join in for Black Lives Matter this year? That answer has a lot of parts to it, but the little screen in your pocket is probably one of them. Cliff Lampe is a professor of information at the University of Michigan School of Information. Among other things, he researches how social media interfaces with social change. Cliff, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
What have you noticed? What's top of mind about how social media is working in the protests for Black Lives Matter that we're seeing the past couple of weeks?
I think there are a couple of different ways where it's been really important. Of course, like we've seen with other social movements, social media has been very important for organizing the protests. A lot of the protests have been largely structured and advertised through social media channels. So that's one big way. I think the other way that has been very important, though, is that a lot of folks, I would say the majority of folks, have experienced the protests through some form of social media. So yes, the mass media, mainstream media is playing a role here, covering the protests as well. But a lot of the most viral images that we've seen and a lot of the stories that we've heard have been spread through social media.
Can you think of an example?
Yeah, I would say, for example, that the incident we saw in Buffalo where police pushed a protester made it through social media incredibly quickly.
A 75-year-old protester. Yeah,
that's right. When we look at the virality of that message, it was sent person to person in an extremely quick fashion. And that was a very important way that people learned about that particular incident and shaped their opinions about it one way or the other.
Cliff, when I think about the historical context for this, it's certainly true that the small screen is putting this in people's faces a lot more. But there have been stages of American history where, you know, white Americans would turn out for lynchings as a social event. I mean, can we really say that the level of awareness in American life is greater now?
Well, Americans have always been big news readers. That is one of the things that's been very true media-wise for Americans for a long time. I think that what has changed even more so than the fact that people have access to these stories is, of course, that now everybody's a news producer. So because everybody's carrying with them a camera and a video recorder, everybody's shooting this video, and now we see more of the stories making it out there. So I would think that's the biggest things that's changed with social media versus previous forms of media, is that now everybody has become a content creator.
You know, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about this as something that has been embraced across the political spectrum. The protests against physical distancing in Lansing last month also started in a Facebook group. Do you see differences in how the left and the right are engaging with social media tools right now?
There are definitely a lot of similarities. I think both the left and the right are using the tools to organize, which is a very important kind of capacity of social media more broadly. And then we also see the virality of those messages being shared across filter bubbles as well. So whenever we think about a group of people who are sharing a message, we have to remember that the way that selective exposure happens in these social media channels means that we're seeing messages from people who are pretty much like us. We have filtered our friends lists for a long time, and the platforms themselves have algorithms that feed us what we want to see. And so consequently, we are seeing a lot of information that may just confirm our previously held beliefs.
Yeah. It's hard to argue with the power of social media as it has engaged a whole range of causes. Do you think that there are dangers to social media as a tool of civic engagement, a tool of protest?
I do. I think the biggest danger is social media is built for an emotional response. Even when you look at the reaction buttons on Facebook, those are things like and love and laughter and whatnot. The heart button on Twitter or Instagram, all of these are meant to evoke an emotional reaction. Emotion can be incredibly powerful for civic engagement and for protest actions, but it can also shortcut some of the more rational, reasonable things that we need to be able to make forward progress in civic engagement. So I worry that some of the platforms might be fueling this identity-based and emotion-based work, both of which are important baselines, but they don't also fuel that rational, reason-based work.
As more of political life moves online, do you see the platforms themselves having to rethink the role that they play in society?
I think we've seen a lot of that in just the past 2 weeks. Yeah. It's remarkable how Twitter has changed its policies around flagging different types of content as being misinformation. And Facebook this week has been under an incredible amount of pressure for their own policies. So I think there's very active debates and conversations going on at these social media platforms about what their role is and what's the right role to play. Most of them have been thrust into a position that they were not looking for and are now struggling to think about how to respond to that.
Do you think that, say, for example, when Twitter flags a tweet by the president as possibly glorifying violence, do you think that that has any meaningful impact?
I do, both at kind of a platform level as well as, I think, as a signal. So at the platform, when they flag content like that, that means that it can't be shared as easily and it's harder to comment on, both of which have a lot of effects in terms of engagement around content. The other thing that it does, though, is it shows that there is this other viewpoint for people who have put themselves into a filter bubble. It basically breaks across kind of the algorithm and shows a higher level type of perspective on the post.
Mm-hmm. You know, the United States hasn't really shown a lot of political will in trying to rein in social media, but I know some other countries around the world have taken, you know, the past couple of months to look at, you know, their own policies. Do you see any meaningful innovation being done in either in Europe or other parts of the world that have changed the game in how their own country's social media is evolving?
I mean, in other countries, they've always had a very different legal framework than we have in the United States. So in Europe, for instance, they don't have the First Amendment history that we do in the United States. And so they're much more easily able to regulate things like hate speech. The United States, because of both the First Amendment and what's known as Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, we have kind of these bulletproof protections for social media company and for speech that make it very hard to regulate in the United States compared to some of what other countries are doing. And of course, other countries are using things like very protective firewalls and shutting down social media in order to control speech. And so it's very important for people to think about what type of regulation we want within our framework.
You know, as much as some of us have been just having to tear ourselves away from social media sometimes just to take a break from the intensity of what's going on, I can't help but feel that overall, our hours spent on screen time over the past 2 months must have absolutely skyrocketed. Is there any research on that?
Not yet. Some of the companies are releasing some initial figures about engagement over the past few weeks, but it's still too early to kind of see what the systematic research is going to look like for this period. There'll be many a dissertation and many a research paper written in the next couple of years about this period of our history and the role social media played in it.
Do you have any casual observations about that?
I think partially because people are home and quarantined over the past few weeks, we have seen people experience more of the world through social media. In general, people get a lot of their news through social media already. And of course, news organizations like Michigan Radio have a strong relationship with social media and share a lot through those channels as well. And so what we've seen is that because people are home and are looking to be entertained or informed, they're spending a lot of time on social media, for sure.
Yeah. How about your own habits? I mean, are you in a place where you can even turn it off right now?
No, not in particular. And I think one of the interesting things is when we see the ecology of social media, one of the things that I've adopted during this quarantine and during the protest movement is to spend more attention and time on TikTok, which is a short video platform that has really blossomed during the protest movement. And we see a lot of new content and new forms of social media interaction taking place there. Instagram's been really changing and responding to what we've seen over the past few weeks. I think a lot of the social media platforms are finding new contexts based in the social movements that we've seen.
There's a lot to say about how Twitter has changed social discourse, trying to fit things into a 140 character limit, although threads are obviously getting to be much more of a thing. But how do you think the lens of TikTok changes what we understand of the protests?
I think what it does is it gives a stronger window into people's lives. Just like Twitter drove people to be kind of pithy and witty in the shortness of the text that you had on Twitter, TikTok is driving people to be evocative and to share bits of their lives in incredibly powerful ways. The thing that I've seen that's most evocative are people are sharing video of themselves at protests, sometimes experiencing police brutality, sometimes experience very peaceful demonstrations. But I think it's the viscerality of that personal experience that makes TikTok such a powerful platform. The other thing that I think has been interesting in terms of social media evolution is the rise of groups on Facebook and how a lot of the political debate that I've seen happening around the social movements and protests have taken place within neighborhood and town groups within Facebook. Those groups are where a lot of the action happens in the first place on that site, but now they've become incredibly important venues for political discourse amongst people within a community.
Cliff Lampe is a professor of information at the University of Michigan School of Information, and he joined us from his home in Ann Arbor. Cliff, thanks for taking some time.
Thank you.